Hello and welcome to the Trainer Tools podcast. I'm here with Omer Glass from Growth Space. Hi, Omer. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, John.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show today. I'm really interested in talking to everybody who is interested in evaluation. This is one of my things that I'm always working on. And the thing that always escapes me, I think, is having a really satisfying way to genuinely measure impact in a way that is robust enough that I can present it to senior people and still feel that I'm telling a good story. I'm not just showing some pretty graphs or anything. And this is something that you've been thinking about as well. So I really wanted to talk to you about that. So do you want to just introduce a little bit about where you are with that and your approach?
100%. So at Growth Space, we basically help companies, mostly large companies like Fortune 1000, with their talent development programs from management to execution. So the majority of them basically execute their programs with us, whether it's connected to their internal programs or just 100% Growth Space programs, by matching their individuals or cohorts with experts around a specific domain for outcome-driven sprints. So this is high-level what we do. So you can think about it as, an individual who wants to work on their presentation skills matched with a presentation expert for 5 sessions, or cohort of the managers going through their managers training, right? So this is high level what we do with other things.
So what was that outcome? You said outcome level sprints.
Outcome driven sprints.
Outcome driven sprints. Okay, now I don't really know what that is, so let me just ask you what that is first. It sounds good.
So what is an outcome driven sprint? So the outcome is usually connected to a specific skill and a specific metric, two things you need to achieve. In terms of the metric, usually, and this we'll probably dive into that later on in this conversation, I'm trying to connect to a KPI that the company is currently measuring. Because if I want to measure the impact of learning, it will be unfair to the business to measure metrics like participation, completion rates, even satisfaction from what happened, because it's extremely biased. I want to help the business to assess the impact on what they actually care about, which is what they're measuring, right? They have measurement in place. Every company has their own KPIs, whether the KPI will be R&D throughput or a sales conversion, or how many people got promoted, to how effective is the manager according to my performance evaluation. You have a metric that you're measuring. So that's how you start the outcome-driven sprint. Then you ask yourself, okay, let's say you're a manager and you want to increase the manager effectiveness according to your metrics. What do the manager need? Some of the managers need to be able to do hard conversations. Some of them need to lead better, kind of like to help influence people better. Some of them need to work on their communication style, right? So there are different areas or different domains under management. And so we will usually attach the two, the KPI and the skill, into a sprint. Now, why a sprint? Because we want to see an impact in a short period of time. So usually if it's a one-on-one sprint, so I'm working with you one-on-one, we will do 5 sessions around the specific working on a specific skill with the goal of attaining the objective that was defined in the beginning of the program. In the end, we will just see what was the impact, and we will usually measure it at the end of the 5 session sprint. Usually it takes 6 to 10 weeks to complete. And we may measure it after 3 months, 6 months after the program was over. So that's outcome-driven sprint.
Right. Okay. And I think the important point, well, lots of important points in there, but one really thing that I thought was really interesting was about you saying you attach it to a KPI.
Correct.
I think management's a great example, because management is one of those intangibles which every company values to a greater or lesser degree, or at least should value, but whether or not they measure it is a different matter. So I think a lot of companies will have a KPI, and it might be things around sales, market share, speed to market, those kind of measures, but they won't necessarily have a good, solid measure for management. I think if the KPI exists, that's great, because we can tie measures to it, but there's still challenges there, which we'll talk about in a sec. But if the KPI doesn't exist, like how good are your leaders? How good are your managers? Often that doesn't exist. So then what are you doing in that situation?
So first of all, I'm working with a lot of Fortune 1000. With most of them have a good definition of what a good manager is. Each company has different metrics. And, you know, I don't think I'm in a position to judge whether the metric is good. If I can, I'm using their metric as they measure.
Yeah.
For example, you have your performance evaluation. I'm measuring whatever your, I want to increase your score in your performance evaluation, right? If you work with CultureAmp, with Glint, with an HR analytic, and you assess your manager effectiveness based on that, if you're working with a performance management system, whatever metrics you're measuring and whatever systems you're working with, we will integrate to them. Now, if you do not have, you tell me, Omar, I do not have any way to assess my manager's effectiveness. What we will do, what our platform will do is basically assessing it by the feedback of the direct manager of the participant. Usually self-reporting is biased, right? I can go through a development sprint. Let's say I met you. I met John right now. John is great. I got to know you. I like you as a person. Maybe we talked about a few things about my management style. Maybe I think now I'm the best manager in the world, but it's not the reality, right? Self-reporting is biased. Now, my manager usually will have a better way to assess the improvement on a specific skill than myself because my manager is less biased. So usually, if you do not have a KPI and evaluation system in place, we will just use the direct manager's feedback in order to assess the change in the behavior in the specific skill and in the KPI that was outlined in the beginning of the program.
So even in cases like that, we're still having to define what we mean by good management. So even if it's not hardwired into the organization's existing measures, there are ways to describe what we mean by good management or good leadership, whatever it might be. And therefore that would, no?
I will never go, good management is very, very high level. And like I can think one thing about good leadership, you will think other thing, right? It's a verb, it's a terminology. What we will do in the beginning of the program is to define an outcome, a desired outcome regarding to leadership. For example, an individual contributor who is very good with their role, but they do not speak up in team meetings. I now got much more specific. If I will ask you, hey, John, how is my leadership? What is my leadership? Right? Am I Steve Jobs? Probably not. Right? So, so
that's not necessarily bad. Hey, we might challenge whether Steve Jobs was a good leader and of people at least. But anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
I'm sorry. I'm a big fan, but like, I'm with you. Let's say now you ask, okay, Omar, how many times did you speak up in a team's meeting? For example, this is something the manager and even myself can assess better because it's not high level. How is my leadership? It's something very attainable, right? In management, you can measure, for example, if you have like a upward feedback scores that a lot of companies measure. If they work with HR analytics, like my manager's score, or you can measure things over the long run, like engagement of your people or a volunteer attrition of your team, or even team's performance that most companies will measure. So usually, I would say 99% of the companies will have a metric we can use. All we need to do is to find the right metric for the right development program, choose it, and then define a system so we can prove whether or not we move the needle.
So even when it's things like management leadership, we're getting very specific in terms of the behaviors that we expect our managers or our leaders or in terms of defining what we mean by high performance, we're getting pretty specific about it.
We're getting specific about the behavior, about the specific
thing. The outcome, as you call it.
Exactly. So if it's because if I'm telling you, hey, John, work on your leadership, it can mean a lot of things. But if I'm telling you, hey, John, I want you, so I'm seeing you're having a hard time to convince people for your projects or whatever. Like we can think about a lot of things that are connected to leadership. Then I can witness whether your behavior is different after the program.
How much of the thinking behind how you might define a good leader in terms of those very specific behaviors, is that already done by the organizations or is that something that you're providing? Or is it something you work out together through, I guess, a series of workshops where you define it yourselves? I don't know.
So the way our platform works, it works on a taxonomy of basically skills and outcomes. How we build the taxonomy, we built it with a lot of our customers. So we have like thousands of different skills, but each skill is defined in an outcome, because you usually for managers, it's much easier to think in outcomes than skill. So this is basically a very, very deep data set. And the experts who will work with your people will be tagged on their mastery in a very, very specific skill. So this is basically the backend. This is the core of our platform. Now, if you come as a customer, you can basically choose to use our taxonomy as a standard. A lot of them do that. Or you can tell me, hey, Omer, we have our taxonomy as we define in our companies, and we want to use our taxonomy in order to define like the behaviors or the skills. In that case, we have basically a feature called dynamic taxonomy that we translate your taxonomy to our taxonomy. So your people are talking basically in your language. So it's connected to basically your flow form.
Yeah, I was interested in that because I think if you're imposing yours, although it might be great and it has a lot of intellectual foundation, you work internationally as well. So different expectations of managers in California than in Israel, than in the UK, than in wherever country you want to pick. Those of us that work in international organizations are very acutely aware of how easy it is to take your, in my case, British point of view, go to a different country, think you're brilliant, and make a complete hash of it because you've just got a complete lack of cultural awareness about the assumptions around managers and manager behaviors or leader, whatever it might be. So I'm guessing that you've got that experience, I know, to some extent, but having those conversations with your customers are going to help you nuance some of those taxonomies as you described them.
Yeah. So usually we will try to basically use your taxonomy if you have a taxonomy. If not, you can use our taxonomy as a default. And I assume your taxonomy, let's say last year we worked in 65 different countries. So let's say you're a company working in with a lot of different sites. So we can actually adjust the taxonomy to speak in your language the way you define it in California, Israel, and the UK.
Yeah, no, it's just something that I come up against a lot in my role, looking at that having that cultural sensitivity to understand what kind of management is right and what works and doesn't work, etc. So I think that's really important. You also mentioned about some people prefer outcomes than skills. So your example was speaking up in meetings. So that was an example of an outcome. Is that right?
Yeah, but in the individual level, I think, again, connecting to your original question of eventually how companies prove the impact of talent development programs, right? Whether it's done internally, externally, like how do you come to your leadership, to your CEO with a slide, hey, this is what I did. Now, usually you want to do it basically bottom up by each individual to prove the impact on their specific KPIs and their specific behaviors, whether you're using your assessments or you're using the assessment of the direct manager. But then, even more importantly, you want to prove the impact on a cohort. And usually talent development programs are focused on cohorts, right? Sometimes new managers just got promoted from individual contributor to the first managerial role, right? Sometimes you work with a succession group because you want to increase their probability to get promoted within the next year or something like that. Sometimes you're working with a specific function to fix an issue in the organization. So usually talent development programs are trying to focus on a population and achieve an outcome. So what we would try to do is not only prove the impact of the individual, but we would like to prove the impact on the cohort. So for example, let's say you're trying to work with managers, with new managers on their management skills as was assessed in your performance evaluation. So what we will do is we will basically A/B test or take two groups of managers. One will go through the program, one will not go through the program. And then we will see the difference, the statistical difference before and after in the two cohorts, kind of like A/B test that you do in marketing or product. So we apply this concept into learning and development that gives management a very good sense of like, was it worth it, basically. So that's the case of management, but we can do the same thing in like succession planning or like what's the percentage of the cohort that went through the program that got promoted within the next 12 months versus the control group. We can do it in a specific functional KPIs or just check the team's KPIs of each managers and how were there before and after. So again, it's the same concept. It's we're trying to connect to your metrics, to doing the intervention, to define the right test of like a control group and a test group, and then to see how it's different within the time frame that we define.
I think that's a couple of thoughts, really. I mean, initially, just the, going back to the point about what we mean by outcome, or as you call it, or behavior, I suppose I would call it, where you've defined something like speaking up or influencing, but you've actually said, well, to do that, you've got to speak up in a meeting, is one example of how influencing skills or public speaking skills show up in context. So I think that's the first point. And I think that's because if you just call something vague like influencing or speaking, it just doesn't mean much, really. Put it into context. So you've got to do it at the right time, in the right context, for the right intensity, the right duration, the right, you know, you've got to pick. Or there's lots of skills that mean about how you apply a skill. Goodness me, I'm talking waffle here. But anyway, whatever. I hope people are following. So I think that's a really important point, the way you describe it in terms of what you call outcomes. I just want to talk about A-B testing, because this is obviously a gold standard when it comes to data, that you would always have a control group. But there are issues around that, because do those people not do any development during that period of time? They might be developing themselves in different ways on different programs, and you can't really ask them to not develop themselves. And also, how do you pick them? If it's volunteers, you've then got a certain amount of bias in that, because you've got people that are volunteering, unnecessarily self-selecting. So how do you make that work and keep that statistical viability?
If you want to run like a good test, again, everything you mentioned are basically not good tests, right? If it's voluntary, so you have a bias, you have like confounding variables. You're trying to eliminate confounding variables. The only way to eliminate confounding variables is basically to take the group and to just divide the group kind of like randomly between functions, between performance. So you have basically two groups, kind of like as you were testing a new medicine, for example, right? So you really need, if you want to go that path, and a lot of companies do not, which I respect, some companies do. The nice thing, if you're doing that, is that you have a very good test. Because if, let's say, you define a group, let's say a cohort of new managers, you divided them to two groups, kind of like lookalikes between the groups. So it's almost similar. It's never identical, but it's similar enough.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And not based on selection and so forth. And then you do, like, the only difference between the two groups is your intervention in the test group. Now, people will develop themselves, right? This is fine. And things will happen in their lives. But if you define the groups well enough, and if the only difference between the groups was your intervention, your program, then you have yourself, I would say, a good enough test. Is it perfect? No. Is it good enough? Usually, yes. And like, it's convincing enough because you define a good test, which is much better than not measuring and not testing.
Yeah, I guess it would even out, because people even in the group that you are intervening with, some of those won't actually engage that much anyway. And some of them will go way beyond what you're doing and develop themselves above and beyond whatever you're doing. So I guess that evens out, as long as your selection process is randomized, as you said, and sufficiently large that you can do that. But again, I mean, I'm just fascinated by the mechanics behind this, because how do you persuade half the group not to do the program and go into, you know, the placebo group?
So usually what you do, you define, and actually we're doing it now at GrowthSpace, because like now we have our 2024 development plan that we execute on our platform. And what we do is basically like explain, hey, part of you will go through the program in age one, part of you will go through the program in age two. Now we have every, like in the beginning and middle of the year, we have our evaluation cycle. So basically, each program will run between two evaluation cycles. So once I finish age one, I have a good results of the age one program that half of the people went through and half didn't. And in age two, it will basically flip. And then I will just measure the difference in the two cohorts. Now, having said that, a lot of companies would not like to choose to go this path, which is 100% fine, because it's a little bit artificial. And usually you want to develop all of your managers at once, which is fine. And then in that case, what we'll try to do is to measure the before and after of the whole cohort in the performance management. And on top of that, use the feedback of the participant and the direct manager on the outcome. Is it perfect? No. But again, we're getting to the most important thing here is to do something good enough, right? Good enough for your needs. So you have the perfect, the A-B test, kind of like the clean testing environment. most companies will not choose to go this path, which is fine, but I will encourage them not to rely on utilization or participation or completion rates or even self-reported feedback, but use better measurement mechanisms like the feedback of the direct manager or connecting it to your performance evaluation and so forth.
Well, I completely agree on things like participation and bums on seats kind of measures. They may be useful up to a point, but they're not real measures. And I completely agree that the closer you can get to the impact on the actual behaviors that the organization values, A/B testing, fantastic if you can work out how to do it. And I think what's interesting there is some assumptions I was making when you were talking about that were based around the way that we structure programs. Whereas if you're thinking about the A/B option upfront, you can, I guess, imagine now that you have a program that's, let's say, 6 weeks long, and you could say, in order to get on this program, you have to, that there is, like, I don't know, a 2 or 3 month waiting period during which you have to agree to be measured. So you've always got this kind of group of people that are pushing through. I guess that depends on the size of your organization. But you could, if you thought that through in advance, you could design that into the program, having that period of time where they have to measure themselves, which is your control group, which I hadn't really considered. So now my mind's whirring thinking about that. A lot of what you said assumes that people are actually doing some form of evaluation. So there is some way that their speaking up in meetings is being observed. Their managers are actually filling in a form or attending an interview or something. People are responding to your thing.
Yeah.
Notoriously.
And it's,
you know what I'm going to ask.
Very hard to do. It's very hard to do manually. You need the help of technology in order to do that. It's very, very hard to do it manually, just like forcing all of that. Luckily, we do have technology. We built a technology. The largest function in our organization is R&D, because this enables you to scale and to measure it at ease and eventually to launch programs with technology that helps you measure your impact on business KPI. So that's where technology, and by the way, AI, for example, we have a tool that connects your performance evaluation. So you're completing your performance evaluation. Our AI reads that and derives a specific outcome for a specific individual.
Oh, gosh.
Without human touch.
Right. Okay. That sounds interesting. So in terms of actually getting people involved, you're using technology, of course. But at some point, you're still asking, in this case, say, managers to feedback on my performance as a manager. You're still asking for a human to do something at some point. And notoriously, and presumably, everyone says that they will do it before the program. Then they do the program, and then slowly they stop. You know, their participation in evaluation activity tends to wane over time. So if you're going to ask me to do it after the program, I probably will. My manager might do. But then if you're asking me again a few months later, is my performance still sustained? Again, you're going to get a lot of drop-off in terms of participation. Do you have any tips, techniques, thoughts about that?
So first of all, if we're talking about manager's feedback, I assume, because again, we talked about self-reporting being biased. So in order to get the managers to be involved, you need to design the program and communicate the program as a tool for the managers to improve the performance of their individuals, of their like direct reports, right? And if the manager is involved in the definition of what I'm trying to achieve and how the program will help me as a manager and not only the participant, then the probability of the manager also participating in the survey and evaluation of like, did this program work or not, is higher. Again, it's not ideal, and you will not get never like 100% involvement of the managers, but you can get to 60-70% if you're doing the communication right. And it's a lot. Programs are hard to execute, talent development programs. And one thing that's hard usually to do is the communication piece, is how do you market it internally? How do you communicate to the managers, to the participants? So I think it's all connected. In order to measure well, you need good measurement systems in place. You need the involvement of managers. You need the good communication. So there are a lot of elements that basically will differ from a failed program to a successful program.
I think this really reiterates the point, or reemphasizes the point, that if you want to evaluate something properly, you've got to design that in from the very beginning. Before you even design a 1 second of learning activity, you've got to have got buy-in. You've got to have done all this definition of what we mean by good manager or whatever. You've got to have done all of that, or your evaluation is always going to stutter along. So a lot of the problems people have with really good evaluation is because they haven't done that homework up front. That isn't a question. Sorry, I just made a statement and then stopped. not brilliant. I should have turned that into a question. But it was so leading, the question, I couldn't think of a way of making it a question. So let's just go back to another point that you said at the beginning, because you talked about tying things into KPIs. And of course, KPIs for, and I completely agree with you on this, but a challenge there is, if you're talking about trying to move or influence a KPI, then there's a lot of other things that are going on other than your participants' behaviors. Therefore, how can you isolate the impacts of your learning intervention on a KPI, bearing in mind there's so much else going on?
So the only way to really isolate your intervention on the KPI is, again, going back to the A/B testing. The rest will be less and less reliable. It will maybe be a proxy to an actual improvement in the KPI. Let's say you're asking the manager, okay, let's say I'm in sales and I'm a sales leader and I sent one of my employees to go through communication sprint. Then you have a before and after assessment by the direct manager. The manager can look at a KPI, but a lot of things could happen at the same time. Like maybe he met a mentor outside of the scope of work and the mentor helped. Right. It's very, very hard to really isolate your intervention. The only way to do a good enough isolation of the intervention is, again, coming back to the A/B testing and dividing the population into two cohorts. One cohort gets training, the development, the other cohort doesn't. And then you're measuring the delta, the impact on each cohort's KPIs, accumulative or like the average KPI. And then you can see if you have difference between the test group and the control group.
So when we say KPI, we're not necessarily saying the KPI that the organization reports at the highest possible level.
I meant the actual business KPI, like the KPI that the business measures, like customer success, customer churn, sales is quota attainment.
Okay, well let's go for an example then, because I'm not quite getting this. Because let's say overall customer satisfaction, then you can't tease out whatever that is, 75%, that's a standard figure. You can't tease that out.
Let's give an example, a real example.
Okay, go on, because I'm struggling to invent an example here.
So one of our customers, US-based tech company, struggled with their customer evaluation scores, like NPS, right? NPS is a standard metric that you send surveys to your customers. The results were
Net Promoter Score.
Low. Yes, so the results were low. And they chose to focus on their customer success team as a driver for a better net promoter score. So what they did is they just divided their customer success team into half. Again, kind of like the lookalikes test. One received a combination of a workshop and one-on-one sprint on communication or client management with growth space. The other group didn't do anything. And then they just measured, because they're measuring it every 6 months, their net promoter score, and then they measure the before and after of the accounts managed by the two cohorts, and they try to see what happened. What was the average net promoter score of group A versus group B in the beginning versus the end of the program, like next 6 months? And what they saw is that the net promoter score of the test group who got the talent development, who got intervention, was 10% higher than the other group, compared to the base.
Right. Okay.
So it was basically a successful.
Okay. All right. I got it now. So we are taking Net Promoter Score, NPS. This is valued by this organization, but we can break that down by whoever's in group A, group B, etc. And therefore we can measure that. So we're not necessarily measuring it at the whole organizational level. We're using the same maths behind it, the same operators and whatever behind it. Okay. I got that now. So we're breaking it down by the groups. So in terms of measuring impact, that's your approach to that. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you would like to mention?
Yeah, I think we spoke about different ways to measure. You can use your functional KPIs. You can use your performance evaluation cycles. You can use the direct manager's feedback on the improvement. So you have various tools. You have various models. You can do the A/B testing, or you can do just before and after a measurement, or even only after. And then we talked about sprints, that in order to really make an impact and prove that you're making an impact, the most efficient way would do to focus on a sprint, whether it's one-on-one development, internal mentoring, or external development with a coach or a mentor, or whether it's a cohort, an internal-led cohort or external, make it a very, very predefined number of sessions So not unlimited, open-ended, because you want a beginning and an end for any program. So everything is focused. And define a specific objective, a specific outcome for each program. So I think all these are components of basically a successful program. We talked about communication and the importance of communication and the importance of getting the managers involved and how you market it internally. And we spoke about using technology in order to do all of that, because it's very complicated to do it right manually. So I think we covered.
Fantastic summary. That saves me doing it. So brilliant. Thank you very much for that, Omar. And if anybody wants to know anything more about you, GrowthSpace, is that just growthspace.com?
Growthspace.com, or you can connect me with me on LinkedIn.
I'll put all of that in the show notes for this thing. So thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate it. Great conversation. Really enjoyed it. And thanks for all of your ideas.
Thank you so much.